you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Fandom Files. We're a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachrin, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire. And today, I'm exhausted. It's the end of Comic-Con Sunday, and I'm with my pal Adi Shankar, who is here for, I mean, probably 30 projects, but I think Castlevania is the one that you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's the one that, even at New York Comic-Con, yeah, that's the one that they flew me out for. Yeah.
That's awesome. I rewatched the first season last night. It's quick, so it's not like a huge task, but I really dug it even more the second time.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was good. So how's your you said you texted me yesterday and said you had like a great day yesterday. So what went down? Or maybe you had a great day Friday, one of the days.
Yeah, great day Friday. No, I reconnected with an old friend.
Got it.
Who I hadn't seen in 10 years, but this is someone that was like super important to me when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And so I like that you come to New York for work, but there's other stuff going on as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's one of the things I love about New York. It's like a grid full of people and everyone is very close. It's not like the LA thing where everything's a challenge to get anywhere or do anything and everyone's kind of trapped.
It's really just requires like a will to see people here. It's not like a matter of means. You know, I mean, sometimes the subway sucks, so that's part of it, but you just got to want to see people. There's nothing that stops you otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah.
LA, whenever I'm in LA, I'm like, well, I guess I'm stuck in this hotel.
Right. Or I'm meeting up with someone and now I'm stuck here because there's no cell phone reception. I'm 40 minutes up a hill somewhere and it's going to take me 50 minutes to even get to figure out where I am. And I'll just run into some guy with a frill hat who thinks he's super cool and makes me feel bad about myself.
Yeah. It's a buddy of mine who I'm just making sure I double record. This is why I'm looking at my phone. A buddy of mine, he moved out to LA after college and we went to Syracuse together. And at one point we were talking about like the differences between the cities. Cause he grew up around here. He's like, LA, you drive an hour to see someone for that one drink for an hour. Then you drive back. And that's what social life is other than in your neighborhood.
Oh, it's a complete disaster. Yeah. I mean, it's complete. I don't think LA is going to be the entertainment capital of the world very much longer.
Where do you think it's going to be?
I mean, I think, you know, the entertainment industry has been facing globalization, the onslaught of globalization. And so there won't really be an entertainment capital per se, right? Because the reality is, like, I mean, if you're a writer, 20 years ago, you had to move to LA, screenwriter. You had to move to LA in order to meet people in the business and get studios to read your stuff. And now there's all these online resources like Blacklist, Screencraft. There's resources online where you can learn stuff, but there's also ways to get noticed that are like better than meeting up with some executive for a drink in that hour-long drive, right? And really, the cost of living in LA is so high. Really, it doesn't make any sense to move out there. It makes much more sense today. If I was starting out today, I wouldn't move there. I would be wherever I am, and just kind of try to build an ecosystem in the city, town, or country that I in this hypothetical parallel universe where I would just kind of build a ecosystem around me in order to execute my ideas.
The thing is, like, I mean, I've made stuff in New York, you know, like I've always kind of admired the fact that you just like went and did it. You know, there was no like, entrance for you. You just kind of barreled through in a way.
Me?
Yeah. You like,
Absolutely not. Yeah. Yeah. I had no, it was something that actually created issues for me. I think pretty recently because, to your point, I didn't have any family in the business. I didn't really have family in America. So I moved here and, you know, everything was really good. And then next thing I know, I'm having some modicum of success. But then I didn't have a mentor. It was weird. Like, I realized not having someone to help me break in, whatever, right? Because I was like, if there's a will, there's a way. I will find a crack on the wall and I'll keep kicking it until that crack turns into a door, and I'll bring a sledgehammer if I have to. But once I was in the door and once I started like feeling like real success and options and opportunities, then at that point, the uncle or the family connection or someone would have been helpful to help me navigate all of it.
Sure.
I had no mentor or anything like that. I had no one to call, no one to like tell me, hey, you know, don't trust that guy, or hey, be careful of this. It was like trying to piece it all together.
Yeah, it's such like a corporate system still. I mean, there's more corporations than ever, I guess, in a sense. But yes. Like, you can get, what I've always taken is like, you can get attention for a viral video, right? You can make a short film that everyone loves and it's great and people pick it up. And that happened to me. And I'm not that even like the viral video was great, but it was like a smart little thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't like super pursue any like to it, because I was like, oh, this is fun. I made a fun short film and, you know. But the idea is like, then what, right? You get in and you say you have that modicum of success, but there's still that layer, that insular world that you still have to crack. And that's the difficult thing, because the thing you do to get in there, in the door, is still not really that acceptable to that kind of insider world.
It's not how do you get in, which is an issue in and of itself, right? I think most people listening to this will go like, how the hell do you even get in? But like, once you're in there, it's how do you navigate it?
Right.
Right? It's like Escape from New York. You're Snake Plissken. You've gone over the wall. Great. Now you need a guide.
Yeah.
Someone who's lived it. Someone who has those battle scars. Right? Someone that can tell you, you know, give you like little pointers, point you in the right direction, give you advice.
Right.
I feel like I just got that like very recently. Like literally this year.
Really?
I mean, it's been immensely helpful.
I mean, you went through a period of like super productivity a bunch of years ago, and now like you're still making a ton of stuff. Like I didn't mention Bodied, which is coming out at some point soon.
It comes out a week after Castlevania drops.
Oh,
so
sick. So like,
Castlevania comes out on October 26th. On November 2nd, Bodied comes out.
But it feels like you've got stuff still coming out, but like you've got a much more deliberate system in a way. What do you think that's because you just sort of like, you had to navigate the system once you broke in or what?
No, I didn't really have a personal life and I was kind of a mess, you know? I was a mess. In my 20s, it was crazy. I mean, there was like usually two big things dropping a year, if not more.
Yeah.
Like every year.
Dread, the Gray, like,
it was just like
kill himself.
It's like boom, 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 right? And like the bootlegs, it was just one thing after another. I think my trajectory changed a little after the Power Rangers short film dropped, the hard R,
which everyone loved, and then Saban was
so my trajectory kind of changed after that, and I started seeing kind of a path, and I guess this is where I could have really used mentorship, right? Because all of a sudden I didn't really know what the future held. I just kept seeing opportunities and options and different roads, and there were a lot of forks in the road, and I didn't really know what they meant or how I felt about them. Yeah, and then I realized, like, well, self-care is really important.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming to that realization, too. I mean, obviously, Comic-Con weekend is going to be exhausting no matter what for someone who works at sci-fi, the big live stage and all that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like, I've got this job, you know, the podcast, which is part of the job, but it's its own thing. Then I started this, like, progressive newsletter to, like, raise, you know, attention and money for candidates and whatnot, which I do every Sunday. Comes out, and that's another interview and managing it all, which I've never really managed a business, and in so much of that is, you know, money is involved as a business.
Yes.
Then there's like personal work and freelance work, you know, that doesn't interfere with sci-fi. So like every time I see an opportunity, someone calls me like, hey, I want you to work on this thing for, you know, this political, like the Working Families Party wanted me to do a thing for them, like newsletters. I'm like, yeah, like, why wouldn't I? And then it's, I have to got another freelance gig doing something for a brand that's like, in case my bosses are listening, not competing, it's about dogs. And so like, I'm jumping on that. And so I find myself like every single night working until midnight because I got like 40 other projects. And I don't know, like, should I just cool it and work on something I'm really, really passionate about? Not that I'm not passionate about certain things, but that's the difficult thing. Like maybe I won't finish a screenplay because I'm doing, you know, getting extra money for writing about dogs. And it seems like you kind of went through that to some degree. Not the dogs part, but.
No, I mean, there's something to be said about the power of focus.
Yeah.
Right? So it's focusing on a couple things, right? And I didn't go to it the same way you went through it, or you're going through it right now, because you're jumping around in different like mediums, different genres, different things. Like I've always had an aesthetic,
yeah,
that I've favored, so that kind of made things more clear, kind of from a picking what to do perspective. Like I tried to kill myself in 2016.
Oh wow.
So yeah, what I went through was like severe depression.
Mm-hmm. I mean, was it sort of thing like the business just wasn't like the you thought? I don't know. I feel like sometimes I feel like I'll be rewarded by my work and then it doesn't go there. Doesn't feel the reward you think you're going to get.
No, it had nothing to do with that. It was just literally like, I mean, I'm pretty much alone here, right? I mean, yeah. I moved here at 16.
Yeah.
And like, I went to college and I have wonderful friends from university, but then I immediately jumped into this crazy world of Hollywood, and it became like a bullet train that I was on. Yeah. So, you know, it was like project to project. When I think back to my 20s, I don't remember stuff. How do I say this? It's not that I don't remember stuff. I look at different time periods based off of like how I was feeling, and how I was feeling generally is coincides with what either came out or was about to come out.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. I've had a ton of jobs, so I feel the same way.
It wasn't, you know, and I don't blame the business for any of how I was feeling. It's more, you know, the entertainment in general, like anything, it's just, it reflects back at you, what you put into it and how you're feeling. And it was really on me to go through my own like journey to understand myself.
Yeah.
Understand myself, understand my shortcomings.
So you talk about self-care being really important.
Yeah.
And you discovered that. What does that look like for you? How did you discover that self-care, and how has that really helped you kind of build yourself back up?
Very simple example. Mm-hmm. I got really good at having conversations while I was asleep. Right? So the phone would ring in the morning, and I would just literally have conversations while I was asleep, and I'd have like really good conversations. Like people didn't know that I was asleep, and I got really good at this, and it was really weird. And then I would immediately wake up, and my phone was never off, right? So I would immediately jump off and check my email.
Yep, I know that. That's, right. That's me.
I realize it's a huge problem, because it doesn't give your brain a chance to actually reset, because you're jumping off of a fight or flight state into another fight or flight state. So your body's constantly in a fight or flight state, and your body's actually designed to regenerate and restore. But when it's in fight or flight, when it's in survival mode, it's not. It's not doing that. Mm-hmm. So you're like deteriorating. So first thing I do now when I wake up is I just think of all the things I'm grateful for. Then I meditate. I have like a balancing meditation thing I do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I also use a machine called the Mind Spa.
Okay.
And it's like a pair of glasses plus earphones, and you put it on a program and it shoots light at you in a pattern mixed with sound, and it kind of tunes out the world.
Interesting.
So I do that first. And then just that literally that one tweak made it so that I was like ready for the day, versus feeling like I was waking up and a tsunami was coming at me.
Right. You know, I remember being in a car this past spring, and I was not driving. I was in the passenger seat, and I was like refreshed. It was a Sunday, so there was no reason for me to be, it was a holiday weekend. It might've been a Monday on a holiday weekend. And there's no reason for me to like be having people email me. You know, there was no like news. There was no like Kavanaugh thing going on at the time. There was nothing to keep up with. And I kept refreshing my Twitter feed and checking my email. And I was like, nothing was coming or nothing interesting. I felt this like, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was like, where's that dread coming from? Mm-hmm. I'm not getting that constant stimulation. Yeah. Because I like the stimulation of the emails and all the things I'm doing. And then when I finally stop, then you're like, why? I don't need to be constantly stimulated. I think about like Rob Lowe in Parks and Recreation. I know it was kind of a joke when he's running around. He's like, but I don't stop. I don't have to think. But I think, oh, wow, yeah, that's real.
You know, we're all like crackheads to social media, right? Yeah. And I think at some point this stuff should be regulated. I don't know what that regulation looks like necessarily.
Right.
But, you know, it wasn't that long ago where people were doing hard drugs and they weren't illegal.
Sure.
And they were just, hey, this makes me feel great. Great. Let's do it. And then all of a sudden, when we were growing up, there were programs that were designed to tell you what these things were, what their effects were, and why you shouldn't do them.
Dare.
Yeah.
I think I actually was thinking about Dare yesterday. I don't know why, but the idea that
probably because
like,
I wore a Dare shirt everywhere for like
you
2 years.
Wear that for a long time. Well, it's also like speaking of like you, I feel like you still people know your work. Obviously, like your work, I think speaks for yourself more than you. Your quotes speak for you at this point. But there was like a time where there was like Adi Shankar was a brand. Like everyone kind of you know knew who you were to some degree. You're very like out there, you know. Did that add to the pressure of feeling like you had to constantly be working or constantly being on or constantly doing stuff because people knew who you were and you had an expectation to fill?
I mean, probably. Like, what actually is a brand now, you know, in 2018? I feel like it really came down to, like, why am I doing this? Yeah, what is the point? I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So you said there was a time when, how did you phrase it?
Oh, yeah, you were a time where you were a brand and everyone knew who you were. And I mean, people still know, but to some degree, like, people, like, did you feel like you had to keep up with that? You had to constantly give them more, or people expected things of you, or you had to keep up that, not an act, but that persona?
So, okay, this is weird, because this is where I'm talking about what, this is what I'm, okay, like, I don't really have self-awareness of some of this stuff, right? So I feel a shift. There has been a shift. Absolutely, I feel it, right? But I don't know if that's an internal shift or an external shift. So I don't know how my people's perception of me has changed in the last 2 years.
Right.
Right. I don't know if I've become more of a brand, less of a brand, become more visible, less visible. I don't know if more people know who I am or less people know who I am. I don't know if more people, like, I have no idea. Like this stuff, like if you point to someone else, right? If you're like, hey, Chris Pine, I can give you analysis of what I think the consensus is on Chris Pine. But when you apply that to your that metric to yourself, like, I have zero awareness.
Right. I mean, I guess in the sense that, like, you dress differently than you do now. You know, you were, I guess maybe, like, brash isn't the word, because brash is, like, a bad connotation, but, like, you were out there more, in a way. And I wonder if you put pressure on yourself to be out there, or that was just the way you wanted, you know, you were just enjoying breaking into the business and putting all this stuff out there, and it was, like, a fun time until it wasn't.
You know what it was? I think back then, right? Because you're really not talking about the business at that point. You're talking about the media ecosystem.
Sure.
Like, I was covered in the media ecosystem a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be in the front page of Reddit a lot and, like, yeah, that kind of thing, right? But now thinking back, that was really, like, that had nothing to do with the entertainment press. The entertainment, you know, like Hollywood existed in its own thing, right? Like, movies would come out, an actor would go, like, on some sort of talk show,
right,
like once, maybe The View, and a couple radio spots, and then that would be it. And then there was all these things popping up because of the internet, but that had really nothing to do with Hollywood. But then over the last 2 years, they started integrating, right? So all of a sudden, the same sites that I was doing interviews with were now, like, sitting there and interviewing Tom Cruise.
Sure. Yeah, they realized they had to go take things to the fans and not just this top level.
Totally.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, they'll find me, I'm that important. They were like, oh shit, no one cares about me. Oh, okay, so I've got to, exactly. I'm literally trying to, like, figure this out because your question's so interesting. I feel like the media ecosystem evolved in the last 2 years. And that made me kind of change how I was approaching a lot of this stuff, right? That coupled with the fact that, I mean, I didn't really need to be so front-facing.
You didn't need it then, or you don't need it now?
Both. I didn't need it then. I definitely don't need it now.
Right.
I just really enjoyed... Okay, here's what it was. When I did the Power Rangers short, or or the Punisher short, or pretty much anything, I didn't realize there were fan bases for this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Right? Because, again, I'm an outsider. I'm an immigrant. I didn't... You know, I was watching these things internationally in a complete vacuum.
Right.
My mind was blown that people cared and they wanted to talk to me about it. And I was like, hell yeah, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize people were into this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's more Power Rangers. I feel like the Power Rangers fandom has blown up in the last few years also.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know you were, I read an interview actually with my buddy, you did, Eric Francisco, who's still at Inverse. It was a really good story. And I wanted to ask a few questions about it. Should we get time? But yeah, there's a huge Power Morphicon convention.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, they invited me this year.
Which is awesome.
Like, it was crazy. Like, two of the original Power Rangers introduced me on stage, and I was like, this is insanity. This is insanity. Like, what is going on?
What's crazy to me is that, like, not, I mean, it's not crazy. People love stuff from their childhood and they hold it tight, and that's that is great. I mean, that's part of the business I'm in to some degree. Most things are reboots. You talk about the media shifting. I've noticed, and I mean, I'm part of it. You see, it wasn't just The Last Jedi, but that kind of crystallized it, I think. The coverage of what fans say on the internet has become like mainstream news.
Absolutely.
And that is a huge shift. Beyond, it was a one-way conversation. Now, not only is it not, now it's a, not only is it a two-way conversation, the fans are shaping the conversation in a way. Like, if you look at what happened with, I'm trying to think of a good, like,
no, I know exactly what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. No, and it's it used to be like there was a fan opinion. The online crowd would cover it. Reddit would talk about it, right? And I would be out there screaming the same thing. And I guess that's when I was more brash and louder and in the media more.
Yeah.
And that was that time period. And then there was like what the, call it the decision makers were thinking. Mm-hmm. And they were like, they were still making X-Men Last Stand.
Yes.
In their mind, right?
Right.
They were still like, no one cares about you nerds. People want to see a Brett Ratner film. Like,
yeah.
That was the mindset, right?
Because they were just having those lunches and not reading Reddit.
Right. And then once Trump got elected, mm-hmm. I think that was when everything changed. Because everyone went like, oh my God, the internet, like we need to pay attention to this thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at something like The Last Jedi, right? Like, fans, hardcore fans didn't like it. I think generally critics liked it. It was well received. Do you think that the coverage of that sort of stuff, I always wonder, you know, like, I'm in the position as like a features editor to be like, do we talk about what these, I don't want to say, not everyone's who doesn't like a movie is a troll, but, you know, people who don't like it because they don't like a woman's in it. They don't, you know, a person of color's in it. Is it, what do you think as a creator and just a fan, is it like worth covering that stuff? Are we, you know, dredging it up and being unproductive, or is it good to expose it?
I have no idea because we all suffer from some form of media bias.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, you could make the argument that the whole Rotten Tomatoes thing is also skewed.
Sure.
Right. Because critics tend to have a specific profile. There tends to be an element of groupthink amongst critics.
Oh,
right. So, but like we as a society need some sort of qualitative indicator. Of any product, right? Because this is what they are. Ultimately, they're products. So
sure.
We need a qualitative indicator. You know, I want to buy a car. What did the car magazine say about the car I want to buy?
Right.
Should I go buy this car? Or should, you know. So, and that's kind of the function Rotten Tomatoes serves. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, there's two sides to this because on one hand, okay, like, do we need to really be amplifying negativity?
Right.
But then on the other side, like, that's someone's point of view. And I think a lot of the problems we get into, not just in entertainment, but in just society at large, is pretending like there's a uniculture, pretending like there's one point of view and everything else is not valid, right? Mm-hmm. We've created this in film. There's this concept of like, there's good movies and bad movies. When the reality is like, you know, you take a movie like Running Scared,
okay,
right? Or a movie like Smoking Aces.
Sure.
Both of those are good examples of this. They have like 23 to 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not good.
Yeah.
But they have diehard followings.
Right.
Right? So what happened there, right? Like, what happened there? So is it that the people who like those movies have bad taste? Or did the critics get it wrong?
Mm-hmm. There's very few movies I've noticed that, like, now get, like, a 50 or a 60 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's either all bad or all good. I noticed that with Venom. I don't know if you saw it yet.
I haven't seen Punisher. I haven't seen... Probably won't see Venom.
Yeah, I mean,
not because I'm dissing it.
No,
I'm just saying,
no.
Like, once I, it's weird. I'm somehow like connected. I feel connected to these franchises, and maybe I am on some level.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, for me, if that makes sense, especially for the stuff you've done, like, it wasn't.
I literally made a Venom thing,
right? Yeah,
like, so
it wasn't a great movie. Like, I'm not gonna go singing its praises. Although Sony asked me to give a quote for it, and I kind of tongue in cheek said I would love to be quoted saying two tongues up. And they blasted across all the ads now. But, like, it wasn't a... It was a fun-ish movie, you know? Like, I'm not a hardcore Venom fan. Like, it wasn't one of the heroes that I really grew up loving. But it's a fine movie. And there's a lot of critics who are in the screening who were just kind of laughing together at it. And I was like, this is going to get terrible ratings. Because no one wants to write the positive review. Because they're with their, you know, buddies watching it together. And they don't want to give it that positive review. But it's making $80 million this weekend. You know, maybe not hardcore fans, but a lot of people are going to see it this weekend. So I don't know what to even think of that movie at this point.
I mean, I think that's kind of what we're learning in the age we're in, that feelings are complicated.
Right.
And, you know, the more, I mean, let's look at how the grown-ups fuck up, right? Because we're, you and I are that generation where the internet was something we kind of started growing up with.
Mm-hmm.
But let's look at the adults, right? And the adults, they're not really, the people who like kind of like run the world.
Yeah.
They seem like ass clowns. And they seem like ass clowns because they're always distilling everything down into like very myopic, basic points of view with no nuance. And they're just yelling at each other.
Right. Yeah. I mean, on TV and in boardrooms and everywhere.
That's like what they do. That's right. Like literally what they do. And that's how they got shit done before, because it really mattered, you know, standing your ground and like, I said this in the room and I had a great response. And really, like, okay, maybe we should just watch things, let them process, walk away,
mm-hmm.
and realize that, hey, it's going to have a complicated feeling. Like the reality is, like, a movie is just a kaleidoscope of sounds and images mm-hmm. that, you know, like, you could have loved the story, but thought it was poorly executed.
Sure.
You could have hated the story, but found the acting so engaging that you were enthralled, right? Like, moment to moment, are you entertained? Are you engaged? Like, it's not good versus bad anymore, not that it ever should have been. It's not good versus bad. It's like, there's stuff that you could like, and there's stuff that you could dislike.
You've been a fan your whole life, and you discovered again, like, you know, when you made Power Rangers and Punisher, that there were so many people who love this stuff. What's interesting to me is that, not that all fans think the same thing, but there's this kind of like, after a few weeks, maybe a decision that's made seems to, even if it's like an unofficial, unspoken decision on how fans feel about a thing.
I don't think there is.
No?
I don't think there ever has been.
Maybe I just see the narrative because I'm looking for a narrative. That's my training, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and there's definitely a narrative that gets shaped, right? But the narrative has nothing to do with fans. I think that's where you're talking about The Last Jedi of it all.
Yeah.
Right? Like the narrative should have been, would have been, nerdy filmmaker who's like a super nerd of film, and, you know, he loves movies from all the, you know, he's like a Ryan, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Ryan's like a hyper, he's like a mega nerd. He's
sure.
like a mega film nerd, right? Like, mega film nerd gets studio shot and like kills it. Movie gets like critical acclaim, puts the franchises, like the narrative wrote itself.
Sure.
It was literally in the process of writing itself, right? It got the Rotten Tomatoes thing, the high score. They announced that he was going to do 3 more movies. Like, people were writing, like, you know, like, people were writing all these amazing stories. Oh man, I met Ryan when I was broke, and he said this nice thing to me, and, you know, mm-hmm. that was, you know, he's such a great guy. Like, he's basically Luke Skywalker for real. You know what I mean? Like, it was all these like feel good things, and then out of nowhere, people were like, wait, something's not adding up here, because it has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. But why does the audience score like not reflect that?
Right.
And why are people trashing this online? And why? And it was really exposing cracks in the system. And I don't think it was really, it had something to do with Star Wars. And you know, they keep saying, oh, Star Wars is toxic fan base. Like, that's the narrative out there now, right? To me, it sounds like a variation of that, oh, Rotten Tomatoes is killing the movie business mm-hmm. narrative. It's like an excuse. That's right. A symptom. It's not the problem.
What do you think, like, and also, I don't know, I think there's been so many changes, even obviously in the last year since we last
People don't want to be sold a narrative. I think that's what it comes down to.
Okay. And now they have the opportunity to state that. They have the opportunity to create a counter narrative in a way, now that they have that.
Yes.
Yeah. And people, and I also think there's some element of, like, we're constantly looking for stories to publish, so we in the media pay more attention to it, for better or worse.
It's like, and again, not to link this to the politics, because that's not really relevant to this conversation. Mm-hmm. But what is relevant to the conversation is again, what are the grown-ups yelling about? They're yelling about, oh, everyone has a different set of facts. Everyone like has a different narrative. Like, we don't know what the truth is anymore. Well, you never knew what the truth was. You just, everyone bought into the same narrative.
Sure. Yeah.
Everyone was watching Johnny Carson at one point, and what he said was funny was considered funny.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have various pockets of civilization dissecting it and saying, well, that's not how we feel. That's not our narrative. That may be your narrative. That's not our narrative, right? And like, and we're seeing this with with entertainment, because entertainment becomes like a battleground for
it really has
a lot of these things. Yeah.
And I'm curious, what do you think about that as someone who is deep in, you know, as a fan and ingrained in fan culture, but also, you know, from what I, obviously, I don't think you're upset that women are starring in more movies, or, you know, that there's pushes for less whitewashing and whatnot. So what do you think about
that? I don't think there's actual pushes for less whitewashing and
public,
and,
like,
and
public
women.
Pushes, not that like it's actually happening, but the public is, you know, there's a segment of the public being more vocal about that.
I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
And again, that feels like a narrative.
Mm-hmm.
What are they actually saying?
I think there's an element of demanding, and when I say demand, I don't, demand sounds bad often, but like asking for, or, you know, strongly, I guess, requesting, you know, since they don't make the things themselves, like more representation in TV, film, you know.
Oh no, there has been. I mean, there is a mega push
right
towards wanting more representation.
Yeah.
Right. I would argue in some ways I'm part of that.
Yeah.
Or I've been part of that.
Sure.
Or
oh, absolutely.
Or maybe, yeah. You know, I'm as a minority, like, yeah. So I'm part of that. I wouldn't say I'm like a vocal leader of this movement or anything, but I'm somehow part of this ecosystem of people that push for more diversity, just being coming from the fact that I am a diverse person.
Sure.
Or I'm a person of color. I guess the other side of it is there's sweeping changes happening. And why are these sweeping changes happening?
Mm-hmm.
And okay, well, it's a political agenda that may put off
right
some people. There's some nuance there, though. That's all
sure.
I'm saying. I'm just saying there's nuance there, right? Because it's not like, okay, there's one people who want more women in movies, and there's
right.
some people who don't want women in movies. That's just not
sure.
That's again, I think we're just so trained to like craft this narrative of this is one group, this is another group, when really there's just a spectrum of people in between with like a lot of nuanced points of view.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that like part of my job is to try and shape that narrative or
Absolutely.
See that narrative. And so I definitely, it's like when you read individual Reddit comments, you realize people are not like all, like you said, a uniculture. Or
no, I think this is causing journalism to evolve, and people haven't figured out what that's going to become, because
right.
really like your job as a journalist for decades, right, was to synthesize all the information, go talk to some key sources who were generally people in positions of power, and then construct a narrative around it.
How has the, you know, changes in the industry over the last year, a couple of years, changed the way, if at all, the way you approach what you make and what you do?
I'm like, as these changes in the industry are happening, I've been changing.
Sure.
Like, you know, pretty rapidly. Like, you know, you haven't seen me in a year.
Right.
I don't know if I seem different, my energy's different, my vibe's different.
It's definitely chiller, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've like chilled out.
Yeah. For
so
sure.
I've changed. Kind of worked through a lot of my emotional baggage and stuff. So I guess what I'm really trying to say here is if you're changing, the world's changing, your industry's changing
mm-hmm.
all at the same time. You really don't have a control there.
Sure, you don't right? know what's what.
You don't know what's what. You don't know. Right. You don't know if you just feel differently, or if you feel differently because people are treating you differently because your place has changed.
Sure, I get that. So the only thing, obviously, you're changing. You're feeling different.
Yeah.
Have your goals changed at all? What
Absolutely.
You want to do?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, have they changed?
I don't care about any of this.
No.
No.
Like if they canceled Castlevania tomorrow and they didn't make many more of your stuff, you'd be fine.
I mean, I don't need it.
Okay.
I don't need it.
Right. Yeah. And there was probably there was probably a point where you really felt like you did.
I felt like I had something to prove.
Sure.
Every day, every year that goes by. Again, this is where the mentor thing would have really helped early on. Because it's always shocking to see someone who was like held in high regard when you broke in. And it was like, oh man, that guy's like the litmus test. That guy's the gold standard. And then all of a sudden, that guy goes away, falls. And then you realize, like, none of it's permanent. None of this lasts forever.
Right.
It's going to go away at some point. It goes away for everybody. Society changes. Society evolves. So, I mean, I realized I just have an interesting place in all this, in the nerd ecosystem. And really, I don't even know what my place is in the nerd ecosystem. At this point.
Ambassador, creator?
Yeah, absolutely. But also it's changed so rapidly, right?
Right.
I mean, like, I was doing shit 5 years ago that is like the status quo now.
Mm-hmm. Right. You were an early adopter or early pusher.
Yeah.
Right.
No, like they literally used my stuff from 5 years ago as a blueprint for stuff today.
So you feel like you like proved yourself in that way. You don't do it to be right, but you were.
I know I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't before.
Okay.
Right? Like ego is just masked insecurity.
Sure.
Like I don't have an ego about this anymore.
And so that changes probably the way you approach making things, the way you approach just decide what you want to do.
Yeah. Also, and then who are you making stuff for?
That's a huge question.
It's like a major question because again, going back to the Venom example or X-Men Last Stand example, right? Like we're both fanboys.
Sure.
Yeah. So we look at X-Men Last Stand, we're like, ah, fucking garbage. Hate that shit, right?
Right.
But the reality is like that's one of the most successful X-Men movies in the franchise. To the layperson, they love that film.
Sure.
The layperson loved that film.
It did well, yeah.
Right? It did very well.
Right.
They made that movie for a general audience, not for us. But, you know, that said, the reality is I don't want to make things for a general audience.
Mm-hmm. And that's changed.
I'm a fan. No. That hasn't changed.
Because you did the bootlegs.
But,
yeah.
But now I know, right? Like, now I know. Like, why did I not dive in full force into... Well, I mean, what I really should have done, right, jumped in full force, taken over a few franchises, gotten, like, these big, you know, studio releases, and, like, leveraged the fact that... the fan community like trusts me, shepherded like, you know, a couple of these like big studio franchise movies.
Right.
And become that guy. But I didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't really care about taking things super mainstream.
Right. You want to speak to a specific audience.
Yeah. Because I see the value in community. Like I want a relationship with an audience. Mm-hmm. The audience doesn't have to be huge.
I think it's one of the reasons why Castlevania did so well or was so well regarded. And like again, rewatching it last night, it felt like this knows who its audience is.
Totally.
This show is not made for everyone, but it's for the people that it's made for. It's really made for them.
It was really funny. Like people would send me like screenshots of like Twitter quotes where people would be like, "This, I watched the trailer. It screams Adi Shankar, and I don't want to see it." And I like thought that was really funny. I'm like, okay,
right,
like,
yeah,
like but yeah, that's the point. Like,
yeah,
like I have a vibe, aesthetic, or whatever, and. You know, it'll ebb and flow. Sometimes it'll be popular. Sometimes it will be not. Like, I don't know where the critics stand with it. I guess right now they're for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people love Castlevania. Body did crazy well.
Yeah. I mean,
festivals.
Yeah. There's pretty much universal critical acclaim.
Yeah.
When I do stuff.
Right.
But again, that sounds douchey if you're listening.
Too.
But yeah, totally. That's just a byproduct of that's how. That's the lens through which society is viewing this stuff right now, right? Like it could change in 10 years. It could be, I mean, look at John Carpenter. His stuff was just not appreciated critically or financially or anythingly when it came out. And now he's arguably one of the most important filmmakers from his era.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, in 30 years, people could forget about him again. So like you have no control over this.
So it's interesting to like, know now that that's because you were doing it before pitching it to a certain audience, but to know now that that's like the goal in a way. And I think that like, I mean, just both as a participant to some degree and observer of this business, that's, I think people are going to have to, I feel like studios want to have it both ways. They want to engage the hardcore nerd, but still sell it broad. But at some point there's going to be such a fractured audience. You're going to have to like really focus on one single.
You're going to need community leaders. You're going to need mini Oprahs to communicate with that audience, right?
And right.
That's kind of maybe what I become.
Yeah, the mini Oprah.
Like a mini Oprah to a specific audience
who's
into a specific type of content, which I consistently seem to be making.
Right.
Before I was just doing it because I was like a crazy person and I didn't have anything to do other than do this. And I'm like, I moved here to do this and I don't know what else to do. So I'm just going to keep making stuff. It's again, it's just having some semblance of a mentorship has changed my perspective.
Right. Yeah. And it's also interesting that like, again, you're kind of ahead of the game, right? Like people, in the sense that like, look, sci-fi is a network that is pitched towards a very specific person. And I'm sure they would be super happy if like, you know, everyone loves the thing, you know, like Game of Thrones couldn't have been made for a huge mass audience in mind. It became that. I'm sure sci-fi would be, you know, super happy if Night Flyers becomes that. It's another George R. R. Martin thing. But like, it's definitely pitched to a certain... There's a poster on our wall, or it's on like a computer screen that's like, we're not for everyone, but like we're really for the... It's something like, we're not for everyone, but we're for the people. We're not for everyone, but we're like for anyone, basically. Or something like that. Basically saying like, I see it every day. I should know what it says.
Well, that's... I mean, that's why the CBSs and the NBCs ultimately fail.
Right.
Because they're trying to be all things to everyone. And really, specificity is the thing that matters.
Do you like... I mean, you know that specific group so well. Do you ever think about like starting your own or trying to get in on starting like not just making individual productions, but some sort of streaming platform or service that like pitch to people?
Yeah, dude. So again, that was, you remember when I was saying that all the forks in the road?
Yeah.
That was some of what would come to me. Like people would be like, hey, you should have your own, you know, because you have an aesthetic.
Right.
That aesthetic could be an app.
Yeah.
That app could have tons of content. Like you could be a curator and all that stuff. But again, I have no idea what the future holds. I have no idea what the future holds, right? Like, I mean, even nerd culture, sure, which used to be kind of like a uniculture. Nerd culture was a uniculture, right? There was like what we as people on the internet felt,
mm-hmm,
and what the suits felt.
Yep.
And that was it. You know, we had our perspective. They had the world had their perspective, right? Entertainment Weekly felt one way, and they were like, these people are huge stars. And we're like, classic example, Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, you can't make a movie without Mark Wahlberg. No one wants to see that. And like, you and I both know, like, no, the move was to cast Nathan Fillion, right? Like, but they're like, we don't even know who Nathan Fillion is. And we're like, great, we're the audience. We do. Go fuck yourself, right? That was like 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's shifted and there's no uni nerd culture anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So even nerd culture is fractured and fragmenting, and it continues to fragment. And that's where you get the infighting. That's again the Star Wars example, right? Like there's now different perspectives.
Do you think it's because people who were young and into stuff grew up and held on to it more than maybe in the past? So like people with different opinions held on to the things that they love more?
I think people just generally don't want to be sold a narrative anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just don't want to be sold a narrative.
Sure. Yeah, there's a sense of anarchy in the...
There's a reaction.
Sure.
To any action, there's an opposite reaction.
So, I mean, we don't know what the future's going to hold. I mean, for any of us, this country or whatever, you know, it's a rocky time. But you were here for Castlevania. And so what about... This is a double-sized season, you know, from last year.
Mm-hmm.
What about it are you most pumped about?
It's bigger.
Yeah.
It's bigger. I don't mean more episodes. I just mean it's bigger. You know, this is... Like, I didn't move to Hollywood in order to, or Los Angeles or America, really, in order to make live action stuff. I really just wanted to make exactly this.
Huh.
Like, exactly this. Like, my buddy that I moved to LA with, like, the guy that I, like, drove out here with,
mm-hmm,
you know? He called me last year after season one came out, and he's like, it's really crazy. This is what you were talking about 10 years ago. I had no idea what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
It was taking that one aesthetic that I grew up watching in Hong Kong, mixing it with like a type of storytelling that, you know, so, I mean, you saw the show, so you get it. So it's just, it's crazy. It's like literally, it's not a dream come true in that like, oh my God, I always wanted to have a show. Not that kind of mm-hmm thing. You know, I think what a lot of times when actors say that, they're like, it's my dream come true. It's like, I've always wanted to be on a show. And you know, that's literally, it's a dream come true as in like, this is something I saw 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do it 10 years ago. The only way to do it 10 years ago was to go direct to video with it. And the video market was dying, and like it was like impossible to navigate. And there was just gatekeeper after gatekeeper, and these things didn't really even sell very well. So mm-hmm the fact that not only did it like end up getting made, it ended up getting made and like doing super well to the point where like on some level, the show kind of speaks for itself. I don't need to be running around with face paint being like, you know, plugging it every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I have no ownership over this thing.
Right.
And that's how it should be. You know, like
yeah
when you, there's ownership, it's like giving birth to a child, right? Like, yeah, like in the beginning, you're like, this is my baby. And then it kind of grows.
Right.
And it evolves.
So once you produce the thing that like, you know, that is your baby, so to speak, the thing that you always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. You got it out of you. Like you said, you can give it all up now, right? You can give it all up now and you'd be okay. But what else do you need to get out of you? Is there another thing?
Oh, there's tons of things. There's tons of stories. There's stuff that I'm finishing up that'll come out next year. You know, I kind of look at it from this perspective. The past is competing with the present, mm-hmm. and always will on a go-forward basis, right? It's not just, oh, these are the other shows out this weekend, or this is the movies, or this is the video game. It's like, no, now people are going to have a library of everything ever made.
Yeah, everything's available now.
And your thing is competing with anything ever made. The past is competing with the present. And what do we, you know, what role do we serve here? Like, as people who create stuff, and people who write about people who create stuff, right. or write about the stuff that's been created, or construct the narrative, right?
Yeah.
And really, all it is like, there are these stories that exist, just like cave paintings existed, mm-hmm. just like vaudeville, like there are these stories that exist. And our role is to protect the stories, to tell them using the technology that we have access to in our time period, until technology changes, mm-hmm. generations evolve and change, and until another generation comes and uses the technology of its day to tell the story differently, better, the more evolved version of it, right? And, you know, as awesome as Infinity War was, literally probably one of my favorite films ever.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched it 11 times, and wow. I've never watched a movie more than twice, and I've watched it 11 times.
I'm very bad at rewatching because there's so much.
There's too much, and I just really don't care. Once I've seen the story, and I know the story.
Once Infinity you know what War, happens, yeah.
I've seen it 11 times. I will watch it a 12th. I'll probably watch it again on the flight home. So I just fucking love it. But, you know, as awesome as groundbreaking as the Marvel Cinematic Universe is, and, you know, as awesome as some of these shows are, they'll be forgotten. At some point, they'll be forgotten. And the best thing they can hope for is that when light density holograms get created and they're completely immersive and experiential, that the person who is the Steven Spielberg of the light density hologram technology, or the James Cameron of it, mm-hmm. or the whatever, looks back at these things that were meaningful to us now in our time period, and that influences the light density hologram.
Right. It's nice that to know or to realize kind of early on that people chase immortality and it doesn't really exist. You know, maybe a story does, or it'll mm-hmm. live on or be remade, but like no matter what, like you're not going to live on forever in that way. So to make the stuff you want.
I think that's why I've chilled out. I was chasing immortality.
Yeah.
Because I never told you this, and I never really talked about this. I've been mm-hmm. told, you know, because you did this awesome profile on me last year. I was misdiagnosed with cancer when I was 18.
Okay.
With lymphoma. I withdrew from school. I was going to go through chemo, and it was this crazy, terrible experience. And, you know, it was a terrible experience stacked on top of moving here at 16 by myself, not knowing anyone, 9/11 happening, feeling like 2 days after I showed up, feeling like, oh my God, everyone's looking at me like I'm a terrorist. I'm an outside, you know. All those feelings, which are all just in my head, right? But still, they were real, and I experienced them. And then the moment I felt like starting to feel at home here, then the cancer thing happened. And so that kind of that midlife crisis you get, where you're like, man, I could, you know, this could all end at any moment. Like I had that at 18. So it was almost like I was living for death because I was chasing this immortality, and it was completely irrational.
Right. I mean, I get it. I've had a bunch of heart surgeries. And so you're like, I mean, I'm healthy now, but you're like, I need to do something. Because what if I'm not here in, you know, what if I don't make it past my 30s or something?
Right.
You know? And yeah, so you realize you're like, I need to do something. Then you realize I can only do so much.
Right. And you realize like, hey, that person that was super meaningful to you as a teenager who you haven't talked to in a decade.
Yeah.
Call them. Yeah. Hang out with them. That's a real relationship.
Right. This is all.
Everything else is just made up.
Yep. Awesome. Well, Addy, I know you got to catch a flight. Check out. Oh, thanks for taking the time, man.